Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Biking has long been a summer pastime on the Cape and Islands, and we have amazing bike paths throughout the region. Cycling has changed from the days of 10 speeds and beach cruisers with the explosion of e-bikes and other motorized two-wheeled vehicles. People are now using these e-motor vehicles for transportation as well as recreation, and we're seeing more of them on local roadways. These electric vehicles can be a great alternative to cars, helping to reduce traffic, air pollution, and carbon emissions. But when they're not ridden in a safe manner, they do pose a risk, especially for young and inexperienced riders. Joining us to talk about safe operation of electric two-wheeled vehicles is Galen Mook. He's the executive director of the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition. Welcome back, Galen. Good to see you.
Thanks, Mindy. Glad to be here.
Aram Goshgarian, lieutenant with the Harwich Police Department. Welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Mindy. Thanks for having me.
And Matt Delaney is the member of the Falmouth Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee. He's also the co-owner of Corner Cycle in Falmouth. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. So let's start by describing these two-wheeled electric bikes. On some of these bikes, we see people pedaling, and some you see people moving right along without even using the pedals. Matt, what are the different kinds of e-bikes and e-motos that are out there?
Yeah, so for years, there was sort of this three-classification system with electric bikes, trying to distinguish A, between maximum speed that they could travel at, and B, the method of pushing the bike forward. So class one traditionally was a pedal assist vehicle, meaning you needed to be pedaling to make it move. And those were kind of going as far as 20 miles per hour. Then the class two options would be the ones that have a throttle. So either some form of like a thumb button or a twist throttle that can make the bike move without you pedaling. And those were traditionally supposed to also be capped at 20 miles per hour. And then the third class was the pedal assist only, but a little bit faster speed at 28 miles per hour.
Yeah. And Galen, it appears that some of these e-bikes out there are going faster than 20 miles per hour. So do these classifications apply to e-bikes that are sold in the state, and are manufacturers required to label products as such?
That's a really good question, Mindy. I think they are required, but are we seeing that across the board? I think is the real challenge. So we do have state law that, as Matt was mentioning, defines e-bikes as the slower speed e-bikes, but we're also seeing kind of these out of class vehicles being sold that go up to, you know, 30, 35, 40 miles an hour that we're seeing out there, which technically and legally are not e-bikes, but they are being marketed as e-bikes. And this is not a Massachusetts problem alone. This is happening across the country. We're seeing states like Delaware, for instance, just enacted a law that would make it explicitly illegal to call something an e-bike if it's faster than an e-bike, which seems very sensible, but it seems like we have to get that level of detail sometimes in order to get that clarity.
Yeah. And can these vehicles be modified to achieve higher speeds? You know, you buy one that's 20 miles per hour and you can modify it?
I mean, yes, just like any vehicle can be modified, mopeds can be modified, and cars can be souped up too. People are souping up these. So we have the state law that says you are not allowed to modify them. But again, does that come down to where the reality is the real the friction and the loopholes?
Yeah. Aram, what are some of the other e-motos that you're seeing on the roadways?
Well, it's not just the two wheels. We're seeing the one wheels. We're seeing some even three wheels. I think what we're focusing on at MassBike is trying to clarify what is an e-bike like you would normally find. Pedal assist, as Matt was mentioning, folks who are just riding to the ice cream store, getting over a hill, or maybe commuting into work, or maybe they have a cargo bike where they're carrying their kids to school, things along those lines. We want to make sure that those are defined as e-bikes proper. Mm-hmm. And our goal is, we actually have a bill, or the governor, I should say, has a bill out in the state house right now, which would create a tiered system of micro mobility, which is the new term that's coming up. So it's not just about bikes anymore. It really is about kind of any sort of personal mobility device that is outside of what would be a traditional car vehicle. And we are still trying to create a system of classification around all of the devices, and also to think forward of what are we expecting in 10, 20, 30, 40 years as technology changes. Can we create a definition system that would at least identify for retail purposes or enforcement purposes? And that's a bill I'm happy to talk about. And it's currently in the Transportation Committee right now.
Yeah. So, Aram, in the state of Massachusetts, are all these two-wheeled vehicles, e-bikes, e-dirt bikes, electric scooters, are they legally allowed on the road?
So, yes and no. So I do want to clarify a few things because we get a lot of complaints. And the term, as Galen just said, e-bikes are not these e-motos, these e-dirt bikes. E-bikes are a very specific type of transportation. And I do think my experience is the vast majority of people using these modes of transportation are doing it responsibly and safely. The biggest issue we are experiencing is these e-moto, these e-dirt bikes. They are not legally allowed on the road unless they're registered, insured, and you have a driver's license. However, just 2 nights ago, we dealt with a couple of kids that are 12 years old riding these things around. They're in traffic, riding wheelies, weaving in and out of traffic. That is our biggest issue so far. It's not necessarily the kids riding the bike trail on the e-bikes.
Yeah. I say, Gail, you're nodding your head, and I'm going, boy, we see this. We hear this all the time, and we see these kids. And it's not just, it's in every town, right?
Yeah, and it's, I have a mixed opinion on this because I do think, a 14-year-old should be able to bike themselves to soccer practice. So I do think that I'm grappling with the challenges of how can we get both the devices that are appropriate for younger ages, maybe the class ones and class two e-bikes as we know them. But again, that gets down to the retail and maybe the who's buying them question. And then the other question around education, I think to the point of a lot of police departments that we're finding around the state is that there's no real way of kind of guaranteeing some sort of basic education. There's no licensing that goes into these. There's no in school education that we're finding. There's no RMV level of training. So I think we have a couple of tasks ahead of us if we're going to be comfortable with letting youth get out there and ride these and make sure that they're doing so safely.
Matt, do you guys at Corner Cycle, is it just bicycles or do you do the e-bikes as well?
No, we have electric bikes.
Yeah.
We sell and rent and service them, I should add.
So, and when folks come in to rent, is there some sort of as Galen's talking, education? Like, do you talk about safety with people who come in to rent those?
Yes, we have some bikeway kind of safety placards that we try to get everyone to take. We do explain like bike path speed limits. So, for example, the Shining Sea bike path in town has a speed limit of 15 miles per hour. So e-bikes are definitely capable of going faster than that. Normal bikes are also capable of going faster than, obviously. So we try to get everyone to sort of abide by that. But yeah, definitely try to have a conversation with them before they head out for the day.
So Aaron, we also see these gas-powered mopeds and scooters. Does the law differentiate between the gas-powered and the electric moped scooters, or does it really just come down to speed?
It's more of a speed issue, but they don't like a moped and an e-moto. The e-dirt bikes are in the same type of, as far as needing a driver's license and having it properly equipped, following the rules of the road, having it registered and insured. They're very similar. But again, the class one and two e-bikes you don't need any of that. There is no minimum age you can be to ride one. There is no, to the earlier point, there is no training. I think a lot of this comes down to you can go on Amazon and you can purchase yourself whatever you want. I think parents need to be aware of what they're putting their kids on. And I'm not saying they all aren't alert to that, but I think parents need to be aware of what they're putting their kids on. Like these e-dirt bikes, if the kids don't know what they're doing, are dangerous.
So
And the risky.
can young kids ride them as well?
What model, which version?
Of these e-bikes or e-motos. I mean, is
The
there?
e-motos are, you need to have a license. So all these kids we're encountering, right? They're weaving through traffic. We had three incidents last weekend where it's difficult for us from an enforcement side. The guys put the lights on the car, knowing we're not going to chase them, hoping they just like, oh, geez, we'll pull over and stop. And they dart off through backyards and bike trails. And it's become kind of like a little bit of a game. Those are different.
There's been some tragedies with adolescents and teens on these e-motos. Do they have anything in common? Is it speed? Is it collision with objects or vehicles? Is there any common thing you find here in these accidents that the young people have?
I think so. We've been fortunate. We've had a couple of minor incidents on mostly e-bikes, kids riding in a group. One hit the other, knocked each other down. Like that The e-motos, we have been fortunate where we wouldn't haven't had any bad accidents yet with them. Unfortunately, I think with the more prevalent use of them and the way they're riding them in the streets, it's only a matter of time, I'm afraid, where we're going to have one.
Galen, do you have thoughts on that? Since you're kind of looking at more of a bigger picture.
Yeah, I mean, statewide, we are seeing crashes on an uptick, and part of that is the use of these devices didn't really exist 5 years ago. And so I think what we're dealing with is a little bit of we're behind the curve and how to handle it. I do want to be clear that obviously the most, and I think we're all aware that the most common crashes are motor vehicle crashes. The most severe crashes are motor vehicle crashes, and literally all the fatalities, except for maybe a four or five a year, when it comes to vehicles like this are involving motor vehicles. So that's the real danger is how do these mix with motor vehicle traffic? Speed is the concern as well. So we have had a couple instances across the state where the e-motos that are going 35 miles an hour when they're involved in a crash, obviously the severity of the injury is much, much higher than if you're on a traditional e-bike. So yeah, speed is certainly the concern, but it really, in my opinion, is how we're mixing slower modes with traffic as we know it out there, and motor vehicle traffic. And this is the challenge because we don't want to keep people from using these devices. These are alternatives to driving, or for people who don't have the ability to drive or the affordability, et cetera. So this is where at MassBike's perspective, how can we make sure that we are creating a system of traffic that allows for those vulnerable users to feel safer within the standard traffic system?
Let's talk to Thomas, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
So I've actually been doing a study on this, e-bikes versus regular bikes, to see how fast they go on the Shining Sea Bikeway. So this study is a little bit preliminary. I just crunched the numbers when I heard the show was coming on today. So regular bicycles on Falmouth's Shining Sea Bikeway have an average of about 10 miles per hour, with the maximum speed of a bicycle I clocked using LiDAR, which is a calibrated and certified device, of 23 miles per hour. However, when we go over to e-bikes, the average speed is only 12 miles per hour so far. These are bikes that could be pedaled. I'm not currently counting e-motos in this study, but the max was 19 miles per hour. So average is a little bit higher, but the max speed currently is about a little bit lower at 19 versus that 23. I've also been counting the percentage of e-bikes. 16% of riders on the Shining Sea bike path currently are on e-bikes, while the other 84% are on traditional bicycles. And again, I think they're both are great modes of transportation, but this is just something that's interested me. But again, with the e-motos as well, again, I wasn't clocking those in this year's study. Last year, I did a study. I clocked an e-moto on the bikeway doing 49 miles per hour. Yes. So that was something.
That's scary. Thomas, that's interesting. Thanks for sharing that with us. Galen, I imagine there's other folks like Thomas doing some of the same type of research, trying to, see how fast everybody's going, right?
Yeah, great question. And thanks, Thomas, for your work on the Shining Sea. Please feel free to send that along to MassBike too, because we are also tracking how these studies are happening. And you're not alone out there in seeing kind of that top end be wildly absurd. I appreciate Thomas's call and saying that the average, which is the majority, is really not that much faster, but we are focusing, especially in talks like this, on those outlying incidents where people are kind of that excessive, and that's what sticks in our mind. It's that scary factor, that incident factor. So I also want to level set by saying the majority of e-bike riders out there are not causing crashes. We need to focus on getting to those populations that are. But I would say that we are doing studies. The Department of Conservation and Recreation is out there, and they're putting speed feedback signs. There's a few there for those in the Boston area. If you're heading out on the Esplanade, for instance, they have a smiley face and a frowny face as an immediate speed feedback for riders who are out there, so they can get some real-time information. So I think there's two points that I want to bring up. That the data that Thomas is collecting is new data, and what we're seeking is how do we define what these devices are so we're actually tracking them appropriately. And that's a new field, and that'll help us as we work on our advocacy, and I think it'll help the lieutenant out in their work and all the rest. And the second is then how do we then transfer that back to the rider in real time so that if they are going fast, we can get to that on an educational level to get them to slow down. And sometimes folks just might not realize that they're going too fast or going above the 15 mile an hour speed limit. And in my opinion, it's behooves us to kind of get that message to them in the moment, not after the fact or not through just a study, but how do we actually actualize the slower speed in real time? Because that's the end game here.
Yeah, Thomas, thanks for the phone call. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about safe operation of electric two-wheeled vehicles this morning. With us is Galen Mook, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition, Aram Gashgarian, Lieutenant with the Harwich Police Department, Matt Delaney, member of Falmouth's Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee. He's also the co-owner of Corner Cycle in Falmouth. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Got a question from a listener in Falmouth who says, I noticed a recent post on Facebook from a person who was angry that bicyclists were riding side by side on town roads. Is side by side riding allowed, or are groups on bikes supposed to ride single file on town roads? And the second, can bikes intentionally take up a whole lane in a curve where a car is attempting to pass the cyclist that could endanger the cyclist, or are cyclists always supposed to stay near the edge of the road?
So we do have in the state now vulnerable user law. I'll get the thing, but in a nutshell, it means as a motorist, you're required to give 4 feet of distance between you and a pedestrian, a jogger, a bicyclist. You are allowed to pass over a no passing thing when it's safe to do so to get around them. And I understand the question, because it's that time of year, right? We do see a lot of people out recreating, running. I'm an avid runner. I run on the road. I run into the same issues of people honking their horn at me. What do you do? We have an issue on the Cape with infrastructure. Some of these roads were just, for lack of a better term, they were paved cow paths at some point, right? And they don't have the width. They don't. So there is a safety factor, but people need, it doesn't give you permission to run people over or slam on your horn because you're a little frustrated. You're going a little slower. So what we tell people is take your time, relax.
So they can ride side by side then? That's okay for bicycles?
We've encountered that. We encounter groups of them riding, because you're like the average, like if you're an avid cyclist, the last place you want to ride is the bike path. If you want to go for a long ride, because you're dodging people, kids with strollers and stuff, and they have the right to use the road like the rest of us.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Steve calling from Brewster. Hi, Steve.
Hey, I have a quick question. I live at a property adjacent to the bike trail, the Cape Cod rail trail. I'm wondering who is responsible for enforcement of speed limits, because it doesn't seem like anything's being done near my place.
Who does enforce the speed limits on the, whether it's the rail trail in Dennis or any of the others? Who knows the answer to that? All right, go ahead, Galen.
I'd be happy to punt it. I'll weigh in after.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is a really tricky question. Is the jurisdictions change depending on where you're at? The Cape Cod Rail Trail, my understanding, is the Department of Conservation and Recreation.
Yes.
So you'd get some state agency involvement there. That's who has the power to do it, but who does it, frankly, is nobody, which is just the reality of who you're going to get officers out there with LiDAR guns. The idea of how do we get it so we don't need enforcement is kind of my second phase of that answer, but that's a whole maybe other hour of conversation with you, Mindy. But I'll pass it to the lieutenant who can talk a little bit about jurisdictional enforcement.
Yeah, Galen's right. Like, yeah, could it be us? Sure. Is it practical? Like, we have deployed our bike officers out there. Writing a speeding ticket for a bicyclist isn't a thing. Like, you can't write, there's no ticket to write, to fill out, to give to them. Here's your license number. You were speeding on your bicycle. Like, we don't have a mechanism for that. So it says 20, the intent of the 20, in my opinion, is to help, I'm sorry, the DCR section of trail through Harwich is 20. Is for those e-bikes. Be quite frank with you, the population that we are looking at is these kids not on the e-bikes but on these e-motos, and they don't stop. Even with us, we've been parked with a cruiser waiting for them because we know they're whipping down the bike trail. They don't stop for us. That would be an opportunity to be able to send a message. The bike's not registered. You don't have a license. You're not. But we haven't had that opportunity yet because the kids don't stop, and we can't chase them, as I said earlier. chasing is dangerous. It's more dangerous than actually getting these kids to stop for you.
Right. Yeah. And so, but when you get called, do you get calls to come to the bike path because somebody's just, you know, there's some sort of danger, right? Somebody's riding erratically or there's some, I mean, can you, you can't give them a speeding ticket, but you could, if they're, you know, impeding public safety somehow, you could intervene, right?
Yeah. So far we have been, we've had some mixed results. Again, the kids on the e-motos, we have a little bit of a plan. We're going to try to get into effect after this weekend because this weekend should be entertaining. but the kids on the e-bikes, the biggest complaint we get is they're harassing the walkers or the dog walkers and all this stuff. We have had some luck intervening. The good kids will stop and talk to you. And I say good. The ones that will stop and talk are the ones who are respectful. We've called parents. We've spoken to parents. We've educated some parents on the do's and the don'ts. So we have made a little inroads there, but by and large, the e-bike as it's defined, rider, has not been the issue for us.
Yeah. All right.
It's these other forms.
Yeah. Steve, thanks for the phone call. Got an email from Barb in Dennis, and she says she's 75. She rides a standard bicycle. She has a dog that she walks and friends she walks with on the trail. She says it's a treasure of the Cape and it's being ruined by people who don't consider the safety of others. I have complaints about many of the users. She's got a little list here, and I think she's got some good points. Pedestrians who walk four abreast, dog walkers with retractable leashes you can't see when biking, cyclists who don't announce their passing by saying on your left or mumble it when they're right next to you, cyclists who don't know that the speed limit is 15 miles per hour, e-bikers who are going too fast, or younger folks who shouldn't even need one. And she says, boys, I'd guess about 14 years old, flying down the trail on dirt bikes, popping wheelies. I know that it's nearly impossible to enforce rules of courtesy, but for the most part, these are safety issues. I'd like to see a requirement that all e-vehicle riders have a driver's license, and I'd like to see racers take their speeds to the roads instead of the trail. Barb, thanks for that. I'm sure you all hear that, right? All these complaints that she's got, you all hear that. And it is. It's tough. What do you do? And it seems like education is a key part of it. And I know you're all involved in educating folks, but it's tough. And I also think it's really confusing. You know, even just taking bicycles on the road, I don't think a lot of – you see some people riding – you know, when we were growing up, it was you ride facing the traffic, right? So you can see the cars coming. Now it's you ride with the traffic. You know, can you be on the sidewalks? And I think people are just really confused about what the rules are, right, Galen?
Yeah, this is a tough one too. We're working at MassBike on basically we call it etiquette. I mean, it's education, it's courtesy, it's empathy, it's understanding. And it's kind of getting out of your own mode and knowing you are in a shared space. So knowing that we're going to have a constrained bike path of 10 to 12 feet, it's not a lot of space for all the users that are year by year using it more and more. And I think that with adding in these micromobility devices, which is also important to note that these are how people get around, frankly, not just to the ice cream store, but get to work. And they might not have a car and the transit might not get them where they need to. So these are essential corridors as well. So part of this is how do we get messaging out there? As I was mentioning earlier, like speed feedback signs, or on the Shining Sea Bikeway, there's these great etiquette signs saying, you know, stay to the right. If you're stopped, get off the trail, ring your bell when passing. And I think little things like that where you can get the user where they're at is where our aim is at MassBike. We would love it if there was standardized education in the school system. We would love it if the infrastructure was a little bigger. Now that we're seeing more uses and more variable speeds on these bikeways, do we think that 12 feet is enough for everybody to stick together? So are we advocating for maybe separate walking paths, separate riding paths? These have yet to be figured out, but I think the easiest answer in the immediate is to just get down there and start talking to users, putting signage up, and really get a campaign out of just be courteous. Yeah. And these are people out there. Let's not think of them as a cyclist. Think of it as a person on a bike. And then we can start to try to get to that person's mentality.
Yeah. Anybody add anything to that? Galen, kind of, go ahead, Matt.
He's right. It's etiquette. It's if people just, you know, I think it would be important to have signage where it's applicable, like on the bike path. So people do, maybe more and more people will get the message. But it is basic etiquette from the people driving in the cars being impatient, trying to get somewhere, because we all know what the traffic is about to look like here. We unfortunately we see this, not to change the topic, in all walks of life here. Everyone has is people are angry about a variety of things, and when they see a cyclist or a walker or a jogger, I got honked at the other day running on the sidewalk. I don't know what I was doing wrong. I'm like, am I, did you know me? I it's so no matter
Maybe
what,
they were saying hi.
I don't think so. I had just crossed the road, so maybe they thought
Oh,
I
they
cut
cry,
it short. I don't know.
You know, and it's like I the traffic, it's like, you know, we all know there's going to be a lot of traffic, and just people are so impatient. So I guess that's another thing, is to try to be more patient.
That's
I always wonder, what where are these mostly people on vacation? Why are you in such a hurry? And it's like you're cutting into a car. You've advanced what, a few feet. What, you know, was that worth that aggression? I don't know. It's frustrating. Matt, did you want to add something?
Just on the education front, that's something that we talk a lot about during our committee meetings. And I know that, one of our committee members now writes a monthly article in the Falmouth Enterprise about cycling or pedestrians or just trying to connect an individual to the stories that you kind of read about. And the other thing was we were talking about a way to try to get in touch with the parents of some of these kids that are on the e-motos and such, and try to come up with some like a gift buyer's guide, like maybe towards the holiday season, of some of the things to keep an eye out for on some of those bikes, and maybe reconsidering purchasing the ones that can tend to be a little bit more dangerous. So definitely starting with education is very important.
Absolutely. I'd like to talk to Michael, giving us a call from Nantucket. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Last summer, the select board here discussed the danger on bike paths for pedestrians, including parents wheeling children, young children learning to ride bikes. But there's no police presence on our bike paths here, not even summer interns. Adults are wheeling by at excessive speeds, often faster than the traffic on the roads when there's no backup. And I asked a police officer a different question once, whether it was worth reporting someone who was using our dumpster without authorization. And the answer was yes. That generates big fines. And that's the criterion. That's why they're not enforcing it, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's frustrating, Michael. Thanks for the call. And as a police officer, I mean, it's difficult, especially when you look at Nantucket. Anywhere here, we have the summer crowds. You can't be everywhere, right? And I don't know if they have bicycle patrols on Nantucket or not. But maybe, and Michael, maybe it's worth you having a conversation with the police chief and just seeing if that's even a possibility. But yeah, it's frustrating for sure.
The
Yeah,
police
from
are
our
promoting
standpoint, no.
faster declines.
Yeah, go ahead, Aaron.
From our standpoint, it has nothing to do with a fine we would collect. It is, and I, it is a labor-intensive process. We have actually put officers on bikes out on the bike trail before. It's more becomes more of a PR thing. But if you're on a pedal bike and one of these kids goes flying by you, your resources are limited. Like you're not going to catch them. And again, speaking from experience, they don't stop. And again, not e-bikes. It's these e-dirt bikes where our most common complaint is coming from. It's a real challenge, and I don't know. I'm hoping the governor's bill, if it gets through, will have some better teeth to it. But I do believe it starts when these bikes are purchased. Who, what are you buying for your kids? And are they, are you paying attention to what they're doing on the bike? Are they practicing with it in the driveway, in the house before they take it out? Because even a 20 mile an hour e-bike, a throttle assist, when you hit the gas, if you will, that first time, it goes. And if you're not prepared for it, it could have some consequences.
Michael, thank you for
So
the phone call. Galen, you sort of touched on some of the legislation. What is some of the legislation that you're watching right now?
yeah, the main bill that's in the Transportation Committee right now is a way to define the different devices based on top speed. So it's a tiered system of 0 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40, and 40 to 50. So it kind of tackles the breadth of what we're seeing out there. Everything from these e-bikes that are slower speeds all the way up to the e-motorcycles that we're going to start to expect on our roadways. And not just by defining top speed, it will also say that there are device requirements. Do certain speed devices require turn signals, brake lights, etc.? Which there are a lot of loopholes right now because of the industry just putting these out there and people being able to buy them online. The speed-based criteria can also lead to user restrictions. So, which are allowed on bike paths, which are allowed on roads, which could be allowed on sidewalks. That is yet to really be defined either. And then there's elements like, do certain devices require licensing? Do certain devices require different forms of identification that aren't quite a license plate, but maybe it's another identifying decal that the RMV has purview over? Now, this is based on the Commission of Micromobility that convened over the past year, that the State House asked the Mass DOT to pull together about 15 folks to start to tackle some of these tricky issues. The Special Commission on Micromobility came out with a report in January with about 16 recommendations, some of which we've talked about here, like speeds on pathways or education and money towards enforcement. But the bill that the governor has out is probably about three or four of those recommendations. So I don't want to think we don't want to imply that there's just one piece of legislation that's going to tackle all of the challenges that we're discussing today. The biggest thing that we want to tackle first, though, is what are these devices and how do we identify them so that there can be good data tracking, there can be proper sales protocols under consumer protection, and then there can be good enforcement around these as well, because police officers can't tell the difference between one level of a scooter and another level of a scooter. So this is what this bill is trying to tackle, but it's important to mention that the Commission on Micromobility was charged not just with the challenges of identification, but also how are we going to promote the expansion of micromobility? Because this is something that the state is trying to lean into, because we do see this as an alternative to driving. And we know that, as you mentioned here, we can't put more cars on our roads, definitely not in the Cape in July.
For sure.
We've got a lot of greenhouse gas emissions. The transportation sector is responsible for about 40% of the state's greenhouse gas emissions. And that's the biggest sector right now. And something that we can almost change immediately if we get people out of their cars, versus, modifying homes or modifying the electrical grid, which is going to take decades. And so we're seeing this as a potential solution to some of our major existential crises in the state. So the idea of tackling the challenges without it being a prohibition from encouragement is the friction sometimes of what we're seeing out there. And I think we're tackling a lot of good issues in this conversation around youth riding these, the lack of education on how these are being propagated and sold out there, and then kind of the infrastructure that we're mixing in terms of the speeds of the most vulnerable who are on foot or on mobility devices. How are we going to make sure that they are protected as well as we're getting more and more users out there on the pathways and streets and sidewalks? So suffice to say, there is a bill in the Transportation Committee, which I believe is due to be moving by the end of this week, which is tomorrow. So if anybody is interested in giving them a call, now is a great time to do it, to say, hey, please move some bills. Because right now it's just a big gray area, and police departments are throwing up their hands city and town by city and town, saying we wish we had some sort of clarity. And I believe this bill is the start of that clarity.
Yeah, let's talk to Dennis, giving us a call from Dennis. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, Mindy. Thank you again for your interesting and important show. And my hat goes off to those people that are, like your guests, that are trying to do something about this. It's really the Wild West. And anyone who's been on the highway knows that even if you're exceeding the limit by 5 or 10 miles an hour, people are flying by you at 80 miles an hour plus. And it's kind of human nature. It's very hard to legislate this because people do what they want to do. And in today's world, there's a lot of attitude out there. So it really is a problem. I'm old school and I prefer a muscle powered bike. But if I'm riding pretty hard, like a jog level of workout, I'm maintaining about 10 miles an hour. And if I could go 12 to 15, I'm really working out. The only time I get up to 20 or plus is if I'm going downhill, and it's scary.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can go on and on about all the rudeness that I see out there and the cavalierness and people without helmets flying around on these things, and they're all different versions. And it's really a Herculean task to try and legislate or get people to behave. So good luck with all that. I just wanted to say it's kind of people just do what they want to do. Yeah. And they like that rush of speed. And it's really a tough thing to try to legislate.
But
it definitely is a problem. And I always say on your left when I'm on the bike path, even loudly, because people have earphones on and stuff. But I rarely get that. And people on these road bikes come zooming by, you know, really fast without saying anything. And all it takes is a quick move to the left for a bad accident.
Dennis, thank you. Thanks for your thoughts. And I'm with you, Dennis. I like the muscle power bike too, but you know what? I'm so old school. I like the brakes that you just push backwards, you know. Everybody laughs at me like, but you know, that's my preferred way of stopping. Thanks for the call, Dennis. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about the safe operation of electric two-wheeled vehicles with Galen Mook, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition, Aram Gashgarian, Lieutenant with the Harwich Police Department, and Matt Delaney, member of the Falmouth's Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee. He's also the co-owner of Corner Cycle in Falmouth. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Dennis mentioned helmets. A lot of people going by without helmets. So what kinds of laws or regulations are in place for wearing helmets or having lights on these vehicles when they're used on the roadways? Let's start with the helmets. I mean, we know kids are supposed to wear helmets, but what are the laws around that?
Frustrating. Under 16 or 16 and a half, we rarely see a helmet. So defining who has to and who has to, we suggest everybody wears one, but it's not required unless you're under that 16 or 16 and a half.
And is that for the e-motos too? Like, I mean, is it across the board for all of those? Oh, really?
Yes.
You don't have to wear a helmet. Wow. That's scary.
Well, they have to, the e-motos are a different mode, if you will.
Yeah.
We do find them wearing them as they're running away from us. We do find them wearing helmets. So they're doing that safely at least, but
they're wearing the helmets, yeah. And who has to have, you know, lights on the vehicles?
I'm not super well. So if you're going to be on the road and you're going to be operating at night, you're required to have lights on your bike. The fact is, most of these aren't situations we encounter. Typically, what the nighttime operators are the J1 kids. Coming and going from multiple jobs. And we do find, although they don't necessarily understand the laws well, but we do find either it's an employer or someone who has helped them with the bike, and they're generally within the guidelines of what they should and shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of them. I passed three this morning on the scooters, the two-wheel scooters going down 28. So there are a lot. It adds to the number of these type of bikes or scooters or whatever we're seeing out there, especially in the summer.
Yeah. When I grew up anyway, I might be older than some of you. We didn't wear helmets, you know, the helmets were not a thing. And so, you know, as an adult, you kind of think, oh, I never had to wear a helmet. But I actually have a friend who riding his bike on the bike path fell and got a brain injury. And boy, you see something like that and you just realize how vulnerable you are if you're not wearing a helmet to, you know, lifelong injury. And it just takes a second, right, for something like that to happen. So we do have the local roads and the state highways. Do the laws differ depending on the roadway or is it the same?
They're the same as far as we're concerned. Again, we do see the vast majority of these people wearing helmets for the most part, but I think that's one part of the education process that has clicked with most of these kids, I will say. Yeah. So that's typically not too much of an issue for us.
I say, and Gail, that goes to your point about maybe this is, you know, when we get back to the education, is starting in the schools, because kids seem to have it, you know, yes, you wear a seatbelt in the car. Yes, you wear a helmet when you're on your bike. So talk a little bit about how we're trying to improve education just across the board to everybody. But how do we reach out and, you know, where do we start?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mindy. I think we start everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and I hate to say that we've got a mounting challenge ahead, but I think the opportunities are just right in front of us. I think at Matt's shop, that's a perfect point of contact for people who are coming in and asking about these devices or buying a bike. I mean, great, sell them a helmet. I'm sure Matt gives them the helmet talk every time a bike goes out. I know that there's a law, if you're doing bike rentals, they have to come with helmets. And so there's little hooks there. I think the school system is also a great point. We got maybe two steps in the right direction a couple legislative sessions ago that would require bike and pedestrian education in the school system. It was a very hard bill to get through because it wasn't funded, and working with every school union in every district across the state was too mounting a challenge for a small org like MassBike, but it's still something that's on our radar that we would love to have. I think police departments of all 351 cities and towns is also a great point of education. We do, at MassBike, we partner with a lot of police departments to run what we call bike rodeos, where it's basically obstacle courses and education campaigns. And some police departments run these several times a year with their community service officer team. And that's a wonderful way of both bringing in the community and showing the friendliness of the enforcement side of things, which is not about giving tickets. It's about making safety. And then, you know, in real time, MassBike runs a campaign that we call Lights Brigade, where we will hand out lights at a specific spot. We'll flag down cyclists who are riding past who don't have lights. And we say, hey, here's a set of lights. It's a cheap set of blinkies that'll get you to the bike shop, but it makes you legal, makes you safe. And if anybody's interested in participating in the Lights Brigade, we're also looking for volunteers. So if you want to stand outside of the table on the Shining Sea Bikeway and hand out lights, we will mail you a box of lights for free. And again, it's not about handing out tickets, to the lieutenant's point. That's not the goal here.
Right.
It really is about making people safe in the moment. So, you know, there's not a one-stop shop. Oh, and I would be remiss to say that the J-1 visa holders is also a wonderful opportunity, because folks are coming from abroad, from countries that have totally different transportation systems. Maybe they ride facing traffic where they're from. So we need to kind of make sure that at those points of entry, when they're getting their orientation and their education on how they're supposed to be working and living in a new area, perfect opportunities to say, here's bike safety, here's scooter safety, here's your helmet, here's your lights, and really kind of get them at that moment. So, you know, at MassBike, we're hoping that this really spreads amongst all of the sectors. We view that education is a multifaceted gem. But we think it's not just, you know, a sign or one officer. We do think it's a continued push and a continued presence to expand.
Yeah. And of course, then there's the motor vehicle drivers, right? It's like they're a tougher bunch to get to.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too. We are working with the RMV for driver's ed training. So we created a series of three videos that's going to be rolling out in all the driver's ed classes about 4-foot passing. Don't open your door onto a cyclist. You look before opening your door. And just, you know, if a turn is coming up, just stop, look twice before you make that right turn. So those are in all the driver's ed classes now. But those are only, you know, new drivers. Those are only folks who are 16 and up, rising to 16. So how do we get the current drivers is a very big challenge out there. And we are working with the RMV pretty closely on mailers and education campaigns. But especially on the Cape this time of year, you get folks coming from all over the country.
All over the place, yeah.
Yeah.
And rules are different in different places, right? So are the e-motos allowed on bike paths or sidewalks? Does it vary town to town, or is it the same across the Cape and Islands?
Not allowed.
Not allowed. Okay.
No, not allowed. The bike path, the speed limit there is such that it wouldn't allow them anyways. Mm-hmm. And they're not supposed to ride the e-bikes on the sidewalks either, but certainly not the e-motos.
Mm-hmm.
We have not seen that yet.
Okay.
They've been on the bike path for sure, but not allowed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What should people consider for buying themselves or another adult an e-moto, be that a bike, a scooter, a moped? What are some of the things? I mean, you sort of touched on this earlier, but I think it's worth mentioning again, especially for maybe parents and grandparents. You know, grandparents are like, you know, my grandson said he wants this for his birthday. And, you think, okay, I want to make him happy, but maybe you don't know what you're buying. So what are some of the things we should be looking at when we're considering these purchases?
One thing we haven't touched upon, just because it doesn't really have to do with road safety, but it absolutely has to do with personal safety, is a lot of these things, especially some of the ones that you can find on the internet, do not truly have UL tested fireproof batteries.
Oh.
And so there's a lot of these e-bikes that are being sold that are truly fire hazards, and yeah, definitely can burn down the shed of the garage.
Matt, how do you know? How do you know if it's safe or not?
That's not an easy answer to that, because I've seen a lot of bikes that are listed as, UL tested or certified. But if they don't have a specific number after the UL certification, that's often a sign that they might not be up to the latest code or the latest standards of fire resistance and charging speed and all that. But yeah, it is tricky, because a lot of these companies are trying to mislead you and just sell you on the product. And of course, they're going to tell you that it's safe.
I'm thinking, like, sometimes when you're going to buy a used car, you know, you bring it to your mechanic and you go, what do you think? Do people ever kind of come into you, Matt, and go, hey, I'm looking at this for my, child, grandchild, and say, what do you think? I mean, I imagine you guys would help out there.
That conversation happens occasionally. Unfortunately, it's usually the other way around. It's they've already purchased it, mm-hmm. and then they bring it to us, which is always a tricky conversation to have. Yeah. I mean, I try to be pretty honest with people, because I'd rather be the bearer of bad news than have them burn their house down. It's tricky. I don't know what the answer is, other than, probably more legislation and trying to make it illegal to advertise something that hasn't been truly tested and brought up to code.
All right. Galen, we've got about a minute or so left. Thoughts on what people should keep in mind when they're purchasing?
I'll ask you a question. Just to play off that, just make another pitch for folks to chime in on the legislative process, because the governor's bill does address that dangerous battery challenges as well. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us, but we are doing that work, and it's in process. And I think just, talk to the bike shop. Don't buy anything online. Go to your local trusted spot and talk to a knowledgeable professional, and make sure that whatever you're out there purchasing has all the safety equipment that's necessary. And then a little bit of tips on how to ride and operate safely. And so my main hit is make friends with Matt, and make sure that you're doing it from somebody that you know.
Yeah. And I imagine, Aram, anybody wants to check in with a police officer in any police department across the Cape, I think maybe even the fire department would be in on this, right? Like, they help you with your kids' booster seats, that you'll answer questions as well.
Absolutely. We'll do whatever we can. We've got to get this education piece nailed down and get people safely out there on these things.
All right. Aram Gashgarian's lieutenant with the Harwich Police Department. Matt Delaney's a member of the Falmouth Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee, also co-owner of Corner Cycle in Falmouth. And Galen Mook is executive director of the Massachusetts Bicycle Coalition. Thank you all for being here. Thank you so much for the work you do. I know it's a tough road, but thanks for being there for everybody. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by me, Amy Vince, with production assistance from Dan Tridle and Elsa Partan. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.